This is the Celt Father, Mark Gunn, and you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the Midgewater Marshes in Eriador, Middle Earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 15. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, we make our way out of the Midgewater Marshes and up to Weathertop, Aman Sul, to see what happened on Michael's birthday. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission.
That was just a little bit of a forward. You'll have to find out more about that as we get into the show there, Brendan.
Sure.
Hey, guys, the fellowship is back together again after a three-week hiatus.
Yes.
Hi, hiatus.
Hello.
Where have we been for 3 weeks? Now, I do know the first week. The first week, Micah was taking the ACT test.
Oh, was it my fault the first
week? Yes, the first week was your fault. Lift up your microphone a little bit up high.
I thought I was blameless this time.
No, you're not blameless.
I'm just sitting a bit tall. Hang on. All
right. He got taller in the last 3 weeks. What's the ACT tests?
I don't know what the acronym stands for.
Oh, okay.
It's the standardized.
American Collegiate, I don't know.
It's American kids take it to get into college or whatever. So.
Yeah. All right. And so that was fun.
Yeah, that was a joy.
Okay, so we decided to take that week off in order for because we like the fellowship together. We're not ready to break up the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the week after that was Brendan's fault.
Yeah, well, Sheila's fault.
Oh, Sheila.
It was Sheila's fault. The 1998 Ford Explorer named Sheila that used to be my car. The Wednesday before the Saturday we would have recorded, the serpentine belt snapped.
Yes.
And once we replaced it, we found out that, oh, that wasn't the problem.
Oh, that was merely a symptom.
That was an effect of the problem. One of the ball bearings had either broken or been obliterated on the pulley system. So one of the pulleys was not turning. And after everything was said and done, it was about a $2,000 fix, which is much better invested into a new car.
Rest in peace, Sheila.
Yeah, she's being donated to NPR sometime this week.
She went to the darkness in order to devour herself.
She went to the great NPR junkyard in the sky.
Oh no!
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Pequod,
yes,
is now out and about.
New car.
The new
What's
car.
What's its name?
The Pequod.
Pequod.
Oh,
that's
that the name?
Yes. I thought it was, have you read Moby Dick?
Uh-uh. Right. Oh, is that the... Wait, I know who that is, though, from Futurama.
You know who that is?
Yeah.
Wait,
it's
who?
It's the Indian guy, right?
No.
No?
Okay. That's Queequeg.
Oh, okay.
That's Queequeg.
I was close.
Hey, real quick, we are broadcasting for the first time on our brand new twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast account. And somebody on Twitter is just saying that they are not getting any audio on their end, which should not be the case. I'm broadcasting audio. I can see it here in OBS that it is going out. So that's kind of sad. Somebody else let me know on Twitter. You can see in the lower third there on our broadcast, our Twitter handle, @SecretFireCast. Like I said, I see the volume. I can see it going out. So I don't know what's happening there. And then, Brendan, the third week was also your fault for missing out.
Oh, yeah. Well, because of everything with Sheila in the week before and... also, that Monday, my playwriting class started for school. And then I got my comp exams, my comp questions, or I was getting them ready, which two 8-page essays in a week.
Oh, goodness.
Not so hot. So with all that flushing in at the same time, I just didn't have time to prepare for Secret Fire last week.
Yeah.
So...
Okay, so we're here 3 weeks after the fact in mid-chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
A Knife in the Dark, part two.
That's right. Where did we leave off last week? You guys ready to get into this?
Oh, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. We left off when we last left our heroes. They were just going to sleep until Frodo noticed some lightning on Weathertop. You could say it was a shocking experience.
Just stop.
It was quite electrifying.
Oh, boy.
And see, whenever...
It's electrifying, electrifying. Grease?
See, yeah, it is, yes, yes. And see, now, whenever Aragorn or Strider, you know, sees these kind of unnatural phenomena, he doesn't freak out, but the hobbits, well, they just don't know how to conduct themselves.
Oh, oh my, no, that is, you're going way, way, way too far.
Fool of a took.
As Frodo lay, tired but
I suppose unable, you think that was terribly clever.
See, now I'm trying to go on. And,
you're holding me back.
Yes. As Frodo lay, tired but unable to close his eyes, it seemed to him that far away there came a light in the eastern sky. It flashed and faded many times. It was not the dawn, for that was still some hours off. "What is the light?" he said to Strider, who had risen and was standing, gazing ahead into the night. "I do not know," Strider answered. "It is too distant to make out. It is like lightning that leaps up from the hilltops." Frodo lay down again, but for a long while he could still see the white flashes, and against them the tall, dark figure of Strider, standing silent and watchful. At last he passed into an uneasy sleep.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Whoa, that was our lightning. That wasn't in game, was it, Micah?
So, nope.
So while we're recording, it is thunderstorming outside.
Is the audio actually picking that up, though?
Hey, if it did, that was really cool.
Wow. That was perfect timing.
How serendipitous. How
yes.
fortuitous.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What's another lightning pun I can muster out? I can't think of one.
Quit.
Yeah, no more puns.
Oh, they'll come up. Don't you worry about it.
I told you he was tricksy.
Now, one thing that I want to point out, we've talked about it before. During these stressful situations, these times of duress, Strider remains hopeful. And Strider remains a pinnacle of hope.
A paragon. Yes.
Perfect. A pure paragon. And if you ask any Tom, Dick, or Stanley,
yes,
they'll tell you whose side they prefer to be on.
The, Beauty and the Beast is stuck on Brendan's mind because we just completed episode number 143 of Finding Christ in Cinema, wherein we spoke and discussed the 2017 version of Beauty and the Beast. If you want to listen to that, you could go to ChristInCinema.com. There you go. There's our shameless plug for this episode.
There you go. But Aragorn remains this pinnacle of hope because it's almost like every word he says has, or every sentence he says has the word hope in it. Further down, "Oh, that is Weathertop," said Strider. "The old road which we have left far away from our right runs to the south of it and passes not far from its foot. We might reach it by noon tomorrow if we go straight towards it, and I suppose we had better do so." "What do you mean?" asked Frodo. "I mean, when we do get there, it is not certain what we shall find. It is close to the road." "But surely we were hoping to find Gandalf there." "Yes, but hope is faint. If he comes this way at all, he may not pass through Bree. And so he may not know what we are doing. And anyway, unless by luck we arrive almost together, we shall miss one another. It will not be safe for him or for us to wait there long. If the riders fail to find us in the wilderness, they are likely to make for Weathertop themselves. It commands a wide view all around. Indeed, there are many birds and beasts in this country that could see us as we stand here from that hilltop. And not all the birds are to be trusted, and there are other spies more evil than they are." See, Strider's got that realistic... He's not necessarily pessimistic. He's just trying to be truthful.
He's not leading them down the primrose path.
Yeah, yeah. There's no false hope.
Right.
Yes. There's still hope, even if it is quite dim.
Well, in fact, it's you've already teased a little bit about some of the Christian themes that I'm going to discuss later on, and that is that there are two instances of appealing to hope in this chapter. There are also two instances of Strider chastising the hobbits over words, and there are two instances of, here's a foreword, elegiac lament in this chapter.
There you go.
So there's a little foreword, something to plant a seed, or some seeds, six mm-hmm. seeds, as a matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
For you listeners as we carry on.
The hobbits looked anxiously at the distant hills. Sam looked up into the pale sky, fearing to see hawks or eagles hovering over them with bright, unfriendly eyes. That's a weird description. You do not make me feel uncomfortable or lonesome. Or you do make me feel uncomfortable and lonesome, Strider, he said. What do you advise us to do? Asked Frodo. I think, answered Strider slowly, as if he was not quite sure, I think the best thing to do is to go as straight eastward from here as we can, to make for the line of the hills, not for Weathertop. There we can strike a path I know that runs at their feet. It will bring us to Weathertop from the north, and less openly. Then we shall see what we shall see.
You know, back in Bree, he asked them, as part of his reward, right, to allow him to be their guide. He, right here, is showing his skills as a guide. Right away, immediately. And so that is, look at the change in attitude towards Strider from, like, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Especially.
Yeah.
You know. Frodo had already decided that he trusted Strider even before they had their big conversation. Or he said, or at least I had hoped that I could, right?
Well, yes. I think why they trust him so much is because he's so reminiscent of Gandalf. To me, I get that impression.
Right.
He's short with simple things, but, you know, he's...
Short and quick to the point.
Yeah,
right.
You can trust him because he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
He's actually quite tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is a leader.
But he's very direct, yeah.
He's a leader, and that also goes into that that motif of prophet, priest, and king. A king is a leader.
Yeah.
Friends. So is a prophet. So is a prophet. Okay, carry on.
They plodded Strider along.
By the top, they are singing.
Nope.
Oh.
I'm in the glory land.
That's
a different. So they're charging along. The next morning, skipping down, the next morning they set out again after sunrise, and there was a frost in the air, and the sky was a pale, clear blue. The hobbits felt refreshed, as if they had had a night of unbroken sleep, and already they were getting used to so much walking on short commons, shorter at any rate than what in the Shire they would have thought.
Barely enough
to keep them on their legs. And Pippin declared that Frodo was looking twice the hobbit he'd ever been. "Very odd," said Frodo, tightening his belt, "considering that there is actually a good deal less of me. I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely, or else..."
Wait, stop right there. Let me point out that I wonder if Pippin... Let's pay attention to this. Is Pippin an encourager? We know that he gets into trouble a lot, especially in the films, you know, that were full of a toque.
Yeah.
I think Pippin just speaks because he likes to speak. I think Merry's the encourager, honestly.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you said that. So maybe Pippin does just like to hear his own voice. He can't stand silence.
He likes to say his thoughts out loud. Hey, so maybe he's a broadcaster. With him or something.
Dead air. No dead air when Pippin's around. I don't know. Let's pay attention to that.
I'm inclined to think, and not all hobbits are like this, but specifically Merry and Pippin, I think they're both encouragers. Now, granted, Pippin does like to hear himself speak.
Or maybe it's just pleasantries that you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say these things. It's just social graces, as we talked about.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a pleasantry because it's an encouragement.
Yes.
Or is it an encouragement because it's a social pleasantry?
Now we're getting philosophical.
Hey, I don't know. Hey,
Hobbit encourages another hobbit in the wilderness and nobody's around to hear it, is it really encouraging?
Does it still count? I hope the thinning... Oh, and here we go. Buckle up.
Yes.
Here's a forward. I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely, or I shall become a rave.
Do not speak of such things, said Strider quickly, and with surprising earnestness. What does that mean, surprising earnestness? We use that word in earnest, or the... What did Oscar Wilde write? The
importance of being earnest.
What does that mean?
Well, cutting through the pretense. Which, I guess, tying back to Pippin, that whole conversation about Frodo looking...
Pretentious?
twice the Hobbit of that he had been. Yeah, it's the pretension of yes, this is social graces. We're not a time. This isn't a time to worry yet. We're just traveling along. There's no fear here.
Always look on the bright side of life. Right?
Didn't we do that on the last show?
We did, because that's a meme. That's a Secret Fire podcast meme.
Is that a meme?
Yeah, it's a meme now.
That's not.
It's our own. It's a meme.
You can't make memes. You're too old.
Anyway.
Speaking of social graces, I think you should pay attention to Pippin.
Maybe so.
Man.
That's elder abuse. I get that enough from Brendan.
That got really intense.
Let's move on quickly.
That escalated quickly.
It did. But it's that difference between what Pippin and Frodo are talking about. Oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then what you mentioned about Aragorn chastising the hobbits for their speech, for joking around, for, you know, for exchanging pleasantries. And as soon as Frodo mentions, I hope this thinning process doesn't go on indefinitely, or I shall become a wraith.
Yeah.
And then Aragorn's quick to shut it down, like, do not speak of
no frivolity. This isn't a time for well-mannered frivolity, or those are not the words appropriate for well-mannered frivolity.
I think it was the word wraith that said it.
Yes.
It wasn't necessarily like them two just joking around, but Frodo being too comfortable to joke about the word wraith.
Strider saying, listen, this is serious stuff.
Yeah.
We're not in the Shire. I've been protecting the Shire. Me and my kind, the Rangers, have been protecting the Shire along with Gandalf for many years now. You're not in the Shire anymore. I don't believe we're in Toto. I mean, in Frodo. I mean, I don't believe we're in Kansas anymore, Frodo. Micah just cannot believe I tripped.
He got it out eventually.
I bless the rains in Africa is what I do.
That's what. And
the rains.
And see,
I miss the rains, and I bless the rains.
And Strider wants none of that.
The hills drew nearer. They made an undulating ridge, often rising almost to 1,000 feet. And here and there, falling again to low clefts or passes leading into the eastern land beyond. Along the crest of the ridge, the hobbits could see what looked to be the remains of green-grown walls and dikes. And in the clefts there stood the ruins of old works of stone. By night, they had reached the feet of the westward slopes, and they were cramped. It was the night of the 5th of October, and they were 6 days out from Bree. In the morning, they found, for the first time since they had left
Chetwood.
They had left Chetwood, a track plain to see. They turned right and followed it southwards. It ran cunningly, taking a line that seemed chosen so as to keep as much hidden as possible from the view, both of the hilltops above and the flats to the west. It dived into dells and hugged steep banks, where it passed over flatter and more open ground on either side of it. Wait, what? And where it passed over flatter and more open ground on either side of it, there were lines of large boulders and hewn stones that screened the travelers almost like a hedge.
I wonder who made this path and for what, said Mary, as they walked along one of these avenues where the stones were unusually large and closely set. I'm not sure that I like it. It has a, well, rather a barrow-whitish look. Is there any barrow on Weathertop? No, there is no barrow on Weathertop, nor any of these hills, answered Strider. The men of the West did not live here, though in their latter days they defended the hills for a while against the evil that came out of Angmar. This path was made to serve the forts along the walls, but long before, in the first days of the Northern Kingdom, they built a great watchtower on Weathertop. Amansul, they called it. It was burned and broken, and nothing remains of it now but a tumbled ring, like a rough crown, on the old hill's head. Yet once it was tall and fair. It is told that Elendil stood there, watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the last alliance. Micah, it's been 3 weeks since we were last in this chapter, and we knew we were going to Weathertop. We knew we were going to Amansul. Was there anything that you were able to find to talk about regarding this watchtower and these things that were taking place in ages past.
Yeah, I'll just give a brief explanation of what its purpose was almost. So the Weather Hills, which is where, obviously, Weathertop is located, it was at the center of Arnor, which was the ancient kingdom of Min.
Yes.
The kingdom of the three different, you know, smaller kingdoms. I don't know what you would call that. Fiefdoms?
Fiefdoms? I don't know.
Look at me.
Whatever. Okay, carry on.
But that encompassed Arnor, and then in the center, that's where the Weather Hills were, and then Weathertop was kind of the focal point of the three borders.
Okay.
And it was essentially just a watchtower, as far as I can tell. Yeah, it was the exact interstate point, or tri-state point, sorry.
Ah, didn't they have a Palantir there?
Yes, they did, actually.
A seeing stone.
Yes, that's where one king kept it. Elendil. It was Elendil. He kept his planter there.
Ah.
In its chambers, so it was the storehouse for a Palantir and a watchtower.
Okay, so this was really just a strategic location.
Yeah.
Okay.
A border mark or whatever.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then bad things happened there, and we had some destruction.
Yes.
I'm sure we will get more into this.
We will. It's a lot to cover, the exact history of what happened to it.
But right.
I'm sure we'll have another time to talk about that.
Especially when we get into appendices and other writings such as Lost Tales and things such as that. All right. Amon Sul, they called it, backing up just a bit. It was burned and broken, and nothing remains of it now but a tumbled ring, like a rough crown on the old hill's head. Yet once it was tall and fair. It is told that Elendil stood there watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the Last Alliance. The hobbits gazed at Strider. It seemed that he was learned in old lore, as well as in the ways of the wild. "Who was Gil-galad?" asked Merry. But Strider did not answer, and seemed to be lost in thought. Suddenly, Brendan, a low voice murmured,
"Gil-galad was an elven king. Of him the harpers sadly sing. The last whose realm was fair and free between the mountains and the sea. His sword was long, his lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen. The countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield. But long ago he rode away, and where he dwelleth none can say. For into darkness fell his star in Mordor, where the shadows are."
The others turned in amazement, for the voice was Sam's. "Don't stop," said Merry. "That's all I know," stammered Sam, blushing. "I learned it from Mr. Bilbo when I was a lad. He used to tell me tales like that, knowing how I was always one for hearing about elves. It was Mr. Bilbo as taught me my letters. He was mighty book-learned, was dear old Mr. Bilbo. And he wrote poetry. He wrote what I have just said." "He did not make it up," said Strider. "It's part of the lay that is called the Fall of Gil-galad, which is in an ancient tongue. Bilbo must have translated it."
Yes.
I turned the page already.
Yes.
I never knew that. "There was a lot more," said Sam. "All about Mordor. I didn't learn that part. It gave me the shivers. I never thought I should be going that way myself." Now, this is a good point for a song. Whoops, bing in the microphone. We haven't had a song in a long time. And the Fall of Gil-galad, we're going to learn a lot more about Gil-galad. Micah, did we talk about that? Did Elrond in the Council of Elrond? I can't recall, but there's a lot.
Talk about the Fall of Gil-galad?
Yeah.
I cannot remember.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out when we get there, but regardless, there's plenty of other places where we are going to learn about him. But I think this is a good time in order to listen to the Lonely Mountain Band with their rendition of the Fall of Gil-galad.
The last whose realm was fair and free, between the mountains and the sea. His lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen. The countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield.
There you have it, The Fall of Gil-galad by Lonely Mountain Band. Friends, you can listen to all of their tracks, get samples of them, but more importantly, you can buy them all by visiting their website, minstrelsongs.com. And a big thank you to John D. Bartolo of the Lonely Mountain Band for allowing us the permission to play all of their music here on the Secret Fire podcast. That was fantastic. Love me some... Lonely Mountain Band. You know, Gil-galad, the story, he was old, boy. And he was born way back there near the very beginning, right after the elves, the children of Iluvatar, were awoken. And, you know, in the Second Age, after the destruction of Beleriand during the War of Wrath, Gil-galad founded a kingdom in Lindon, in the far northwest of Middle-earth, roughly between the Blue Mountains and the Great Sea, around the Gulf of Lune and the havens of Forlond and Harland and Mithland were founded. Many elves, both the Sindar and the Noldor, joined him, but soon there was again unrest among the Noldor, and many of them left Lindon, and led by Celebrimbor, founded the realm of Eregion. Probably also stirred up by the finding of Mithril in Khazad-dûm. A lot of things. Also, some of the Sindar and many of the Nandor did not wish to live with the Noldor. You know, so all these things, and they migrated to eastward to Lothlorien, or Greenwood the Great. See all this history that's going on. I love it. You know, later on, he bequeathed... Well, Sauron conquered Eregion quickly, and the forces from Lindon that Gil-galad had sent under the command of Elrond came too late and were too small and fled far north, where Elrond established the stronghold of Imladris. This fantastic history that Tolkien created for us. So there's just a little bit about Gil-galad. We'll get more into that later on, and I can't wait until we get to the part where we can talk about his spear, because Lonely Mountain Band has another fantastic song about his spear, which was called Aiglos. We know already from other writings, The Hobbit and other things in The Lord of the Rings, and going back to history, even in Beowulf and things like that, great weapons were named, and Gil-galad had a spear named Aiglos. And Lonely Mountain Band has a song that the spear is singing, mm-hmm. The Ballad of Aiglos. I can't wait to be able to play that someday. Anyway, back to where we were.
It was already midday when they drew near the southern end of the path and saw...
Oh, whoa. Oh. Don't forget this part. Going to Mordor, cried Pippin.
Yeah.
I hope it won't come to that.
Well, pause. Well, there was a lot more. Of the poem that Sam was just reciting.
Of the fall of Gil-galad. The fall
of Gil-galad.
Yeah, yes. Yes. Oh, Gil-galad, sweet Gil-galad.
There was a lot more, said Sam, all about Mordor. I didn't learn that part. It gave me the shivers, and I never thought I would be going that way myself. Going to Mordor? Cried Pippin. I hope it won't come to that. Do not speak that name so loudly, said Strider.
Second time. Don't talk about wraiths, and do not speak the name Mordor.
Mm-hmm. It was already midday when they drew near the southern end of the path and saw before them in the pale clear light of the October sun a gray-green bank leading up like a bridge onto the northward slope of the hill. They decided to make for the top at once, and while the daylight was broad, concealment was no longer possible, and they could only hope that no enemy or spy was observing them. Nothing was to be seen moving on the hill. If Gandalf was anywhere about, there was no sign of him.
Oh, boy.
I was going to stop there if you want to. Eventually, they get to Weathertop.
Yes.
Yeah, they get to Weathertop, and they're looking around, and they see exactly as Strider described it, a broken crown on the hill's head. I love that image right there.
Yes. So standing upon the rim of the ruined circle, they saw all around below them a wide prospect, for the most part, of lands empty and featureless, which, boy, is it. Lone lands in Lotro. Okay, anyway. Except for patches of woodland away to the south, beyond which they caught here and there the glint of distant water. Beneath them, on the southern side, there ran, like a ribbon, the old road, coming out of the west and winding up and down until it faded behind a ridge of dark land to the east. Nothing was moving on it. Following its line eastward with their eyes, they saw the mountains. The nearer foothills were brown and somber. Behind them stood taller shapes of gray, and behind those again were high white peaks glimmering among the clouds. And, Micah, I think they did a fantastic job in Lord of the Rings Online.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you can stand up on Weathertop, and you can easily see the old road, and you can follow it. And then we know that they have the Trollshaws and things over there in the east. Well, here we are, said Mary.
Here we are.
And very cheerless. Now, remember, it was Mary, Frodo, and Strider that actually climbed up to Weathertop. Sam and Pippin were left behind down in this little...
Dell?
A little valley thing.
Valley.
Where they're finding evidence of campsites and stacked wood of firewood and things. Well, here we are, and very cheerless and uninviting it looks. There's no water and no shelter and no sign of Gandalf, but I don't blame him for not waiting, if he ever came here.
No sign of Gandalf, you say? Well, let's just scroll down a few little bit more.
Okay.
Well, they find this stone.
Yes.
I would like to try to finish the chapter today.
Let's do it.
Okay. They find this little stone that has a strange marking on it. And in the text of the book, you can actually see this marking. It's a
It's very cool.
It's a it's like one straight vertical line by itself and three little ticks.
These are like runes, aren't they?
Yeah. And then three more lines. I should say, answered Strider, whenever Mary asked, you know, what does this mean? I should say, answered Strider, that they stood for G3 and were a sign that Gandalf was here on October the 3rd.
That is certain to the secret fire.
That is three.
October the 3rd is my birthday.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well.
That was the foreword in our introduction.
Oh.
Gandalf was on top of Mount of Amon Sul of Weathertop on my birthday, celebrating with some ring rings.
And all the lightning and stuff and he's magic, doing fire, that's how you were born.
Yeah. No wonder you're so flashy. Ho-ho! Ho-ho!
Are we going to have to do it again?
I suppose you think that was terribly clever.
Ho-ho! Ho-ho! Oh, man. That was 3 days ago now. It would also show that he was in a hurry and danger was at hand. So that he had no time... Yeah, so that he had no time or did not dare to write anything longer or plainer. If that is so, we must be wary. And then Frodo says, I wish we could feel sure that he made the marks, whatever they may mean. It would be a great comfort to know that he was on the way, in front of us or behind us. Perhaps, said Strider, for myself, I believe that he was here and was in danger. There have been scorching flames here. And now the light we saw 3 nights ago in the eastern sky comes back to my mind.
Oh, right where we began the show, where we ended the last episode, where we began today.
Mm-hmm. And I guess he was attacked on this hilltop. But with that result, I cannot tell. He is here no longer. We must now look after ourselves and make our way to Rivendell.
How far is Rivendell? Asked Mary.
Well, it's about a
well,
long time.
Nobody's ever measured it. You know, I don't know if the road has ever been measured in miles beyond the Forsaken Inn. A day's journey east of Bree, answered Strider. Some say it is so far and some say otherwise. It's a strange road and folk are glad to reach their journey's end, whether the time is long or short. But I know how long it would take me on my own feet, with fair weather and no ill fortune, 12 days from here to the ford of Brunnen. Where the road crosses the Loudwater that runs out of Rivendell.
And then he says, we have at least a fortnight's journey before us.
That's 2 weeks. That's,
yeah, 14 days. So 2 days if he were traveling by himself, 14 days because he's got the hobbits with him, right?
Yes.
Okay. A fortnight, said Frodo. A lot may happen in that time. It may, said Strider. And they stood for a while silent on the hilltop near its southward edge. In that lonely place, Frodo... for the first time, fully realized his homelessness and danger.
Oh!
Uh-huh. Elegiac lament.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding,
there
ding.
There you go. He wished bitterly that his fortune had left him in the quiet and beloved Shire. He stared down at the hateful road leading back westward to his home, and suddenly he was aware that two black specks were moving slowly along it, going westward. And looking again, he saw that three others were creeping eastward to meet them. He gave a cry and clutched Strider's arm.
Oh, boy.
Look, he said, pointing downwards. At once, Strider flung himself on the ground behind the ruined circle, pulling Frodo down beside him. Merry threw himself alongside. What is it, he whispered. I don't know, but I fear the worst, answered Strider. And slowly they crawled up to the edge of the ring again and peered through a cleft between two jagged stones. The light was no longer bright, for clear morning had faded, and the clouds creeping out of the east now had overtaken the sun. As it began to go down, they could see all the black specks, but neither Frodo nor Merry... or they could all see the black specks, there you go. But neither Frodo nor Merry could make out their shapes for certain. Yet something told them that there, far below, there were black riders assembling on the road beyond the foot of the hill. Yes, said Strider, whose keener sight left him in no doubt. The enemy is here. And hastily they crept away and slipped down to the north side of the hill to find their companions.
Well, we found that Sam and Pippin hadn't been idle. They had explored the small dell. Yep, Micah was right. Small dell and the surrounding slopes. Not far away, they found a spring of clear water in the hillside and near it footsteps, not more than a day or two old. And so let's just narrate this part. Let's just explain what's going on. They found recent traces of fire and other signs of a hasty camp. You know, I wonder if old Gandalf has been here. Whoever it was put this stuff here meant to come back, it seems. And Strider was interested in their discoveries and says, I wish you guys hadn't gone down and explored the stuff. You goofed up all the tracks. So I can't really make a clear distinction of what went on here.
Mm-hmm. And then he, once they finally decide, you know what, if we're going to camp here for tonight, we need to build a fire.
Yeah.
Because as much as Sauron loves fire and was born in fire and all that stuff, the Wraiths,
they do not love it.
They can't stand it.
Yeah.
So they build the fire not only to, you know, keep them warm, but to protect them from the Wraiths.
I love this. If the horsemen had already found the Dale, the sooner Strider led them somewhere else, the better. Sam viewed the Hollow with great dislike now that he had heard news of their enemies on the road only a few miles away. See, Sam and Pippin were, you know, hey, yeah, we're making ourselves useful down here and we're exploring. Sam was pretty proud of that. But now that Strider explained to him what was actually going on down here, now Sam doesn't like this place. I don't even want to be here.
Right.
Hadn't we better clear out quick, Mr. Strider? He asked impatiently. It's getting late and I don't like this hole. It makes my heart sink somehow. Yes, we must. We certainly must decide what to do at once, answered Strider, looking up and considering the time and the weather. So, okay, let's continue just the thumbnail sketching this here and move towards the end to the climax. Brendan, help me out here. You're the literary giant.
I was trying to say where you left off.
I'm on page 189.
Oh, I'm ahead of you then.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Oh, well. Let's see.
I like...
Back on 190... probably 190, 191. As night fell and the light of the fire began to shine out brightly, he began to tell them tales to keep their minds from fear. He knew many histories and legends of long ago of elves and men, of good and evil deeds of the elder days.
Mm-hmm. Capital E, capital G.
There you go. Like that fell winter.
Yes.
Except elder days. They wondered how old he was and where he'd learned all this lore. Tell us of Gil-galad, said Merry suddenly, and when he paused at the end of the story of the elf kingdoms. Do you know any more of that old lay you spoke of? I do indeed, answered Strider. And also does Frodo, for it concerns us closely. Ooh. There you go, some prophecy right there. Merry and Pippin looked at Frodo, who was staring into the fire. I only know a little that Gandalf has told me, said Frodo slowly. Gil-galad was the last of the great elf kings of Middle-earth. Gil-galad is starlight in their tongue. With Elendil? Is that it?
Yes.
With Elendil, the elf friend, he went to the land of...
No!
Said Strider, interrupting. I do not think that tale should be told now with the servants of the enemy at hand. If we win through the house of Elrond, you may hear it there, told in full.
So there you go. Hopefully, we will hear.
Well, then tell us some other tale of the old days, begged Sam. A tale of the elves before the fading time. That's not capitalized, by the way. I would dearly like to hear more about elves. The dark seems to press around so close. See, elves give Sam hope.
They're magical creatures.
They are.
Yes. Yes. And so Strider says, I will tell you the tale of Tenuvial. In brief, for it is a long tale, which the end is not known, and there are none now except Elrond that remember it aright, as it was told of old. It is a fair tale, though it is sad, as are all the tales of Middle-earth, and yet it may lift up your hearts. He was silent for some time, and then he began not to speak, but to chant softly. The leaves were long, the grass was green. The hemlock umbels, tall and fair, and in the glade a light was seen of stars and shadow shimmering. Tenuvial was dancing there to music of a pipe unseen, and light of stars was in her hair and in her raiment glimmering. There Beren came from mountains cold and lost he wandered under leaves, and where the elven river rolled, he walked alone and sorrowing. He peered between the hemlock leaves and saw in wonder flowers of gold upon her mantle and her sleeves and her hair like the shadow flowing. This is a beautiful poem, and this is the origination of all that we have from the professor. Middle Earth, all of his wonderful, fantastic tales that we're exploring right now originate from this tale. Whoops, hit the microphone again. And we just recently had the new book.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's been popping up on Amazon.
Yes, Barry and Luthien. And you know what?
Yes.
A little sidebar, I pre-ordered that book on Amazon, hardcover, so that I would have it on the day of release. I never got it.
Oh, wow.
And apparently I got it from I wasn't paying attention. I didn't order it through Amazon fulfillment. It was fulfilled by somebody else because I eventually got a letter from them saying, we can't get you this book. We're sorry.
Did they refund you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, and so I still don't have the book.
Man.
And I want it. And it is Christopher Tolkien, you know, put all this together. We don't have time to get all into this, but we will explore in depth the story of Beren and Luthien at a later date.
All right.
So listeners of the Secret Fire podcast, you're going to have to stick with us through the years here. So make yourself comfortable. And so as he ends this, you know, and long ago they passed away in the forest singing sorrowless, Strider sighed and paused before he spoke again. That is a song, he said, in the mode that is called something, Anthenoth, among the elves. But it is hard for Michael to render in our common speech. And this is but a rough echo of it. It tells of the meeting of Beren, son of Barahir, and Luthien Tenuvial. Beren was a mortal man, but Luthien was the daughter of Thingol, a king of elves upon Middle-earth when the world was young, and she was the fairest maiden that has ever been among all the children of this world. As the stars above the mists in the northern lands was her loveliness, and in her face was a shining light. In those days, the great enemy of whom Sauron of Mordor was but a servant dwelt in Angband in the north. And the elves of the west, coming back to Middle-earth, made war upon him to regain the Silmarils, which he had stolen, and the fathers of men aided the elves. But the enemy was victorious, and Barahir was slain. And Beren, escaping through great peril, came over the mountains of terror into the hidden kingdom of Thingol in the forest of Neldoreth. There he beheld Luthien, singing and dancing in a glade beside the enchanted river as Galduin, and he named her Tenuvial, that is, Nightingale in the language of old. Many sorrows befell them afterwards, and they were parted long. Tenuvial rescued Beren from the dungeons of Sauron, and together they passed through great dangers and cast down even the great enemy from his throne, and took from his iron crown one of the three Silmarils, brightest of all jewels, to be the bride piece of Luthien to Thingol, her father. Yet at last Beren was slain by the wolf that came from the gates of Angband, and he died in the arms of Tenuvial. But she chose mortality and to die from the world so that she might follow him. And it is sung that they met again beyond the sundering seas, and after a brief time walking alive once more in the green woods, together they passed long ago beyond the confines of this world. So it is that Luthien Tenuvial, alone of the elf kindred, has died indeed and left the world, and they have lost her whom they most loved. But from her, the lineage of elf lords of old descended among men. There still live those of whom Luthien was the foremother, and it is said that her line shall never fail. Elrond of Rivendell is of that kin. For of Beren and Luthien was born Dior Thingol's heir, and of him Elwing the White, whom Arendil wedded. He that sailed his ship out of the mists of the world into the seas of heaven with the Silmaril upon his brow. And Arendil came to the kings of Numenor, that is, Westeros. It's a wonderful, wonderful tale.
Man.
Yeah. Six chapters for to describe a branch or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Listen, man. This movie, this
Speaking
book,
of which, how much time do we have here?
About 8 minutes.
We have not finished.
Okay. Let's take us to the end here.
Okay. Let's see how far. Whoa. Too far.
The others looked up. As they did so, they saw on the top of the hill. This is something that the movies and have ruined my memories because this does not take place on Weathertop. This takes place in that dale. The others looked up. Even as they did so, they saw on the top of the hill something small and dark against the glimmer of the moonrise. It was perhaps only a large stone or jutting rock shown up by the pale light. Sam and Merry got up and walked away from the fire. Frodo and Pippin remained seated in silence. Strider was watching the moonlight on the hill intently. All seemed quiet and still, but Frodo felt a cold dread creeping over his heart now that Strider was no longer speaking. He huddled closer to the fire. At that moment, Sam came running back from the edge of the dale. "I don't know what it is," he said, "but I suddenly felt afraid. I durst go outside this dale for any money. I felt that something was creeping up the slope." "Did you see anything?" asked Frodo, springing to his feet. "No, sir. I saw nothing, but I didn't stop to look." "I saw something," said Merry. "Or I thought I did, away eastward where the moonlight was falling on the flats." "So anyway, keep close to the fire and keep your faces outward," cried Strider.
And that's what they do. And then the black figures encircle them. And then further on, they're trapped. And Frodo, he doesn't approach the situation with the hope of escape or doing anything, either good or bad. He simply felt that he must take the ring and put it on his finger. He could not speak. He felt Sam looking at him as if he knew that his master was in some great trouble, but he could not turn towards him. He shut his eyes and struggled for a while, but resistance became unbearable, and at last he slowly drew out the chain and slipped the ring on his forefinger of his left hand. And immediately everything remained as before, dim and dark, the shapes became terribly clear. He was able to see beneath their black wrappings. There were five tall figures, two standing on the lip of the dell, three advancing. In their white faces burned keen and merciless eyes. Under their mantles were long gray robes, and upon their gray hairs were helms of silver. In their haggard hands were swords of steel. And their eyes fell on him and pierced him as they rushed toward him. Desperate, he drew on his sword, and it seemed to him that it flickered red as if it was a firebrand. And two of the figures halted. The third was taller than the others. His hair was long and gleaming, and on his helm was a crown. In one hand, he held a long sword, and in the other a knife. Both the knife and the hand that had held it glowed with a pale light. And he sprang forward and bore down on Frodo. At that moment, Frodo threw himself forward on the ground, and he heard himself crying aloud, "Oh, Elbereth!" How do we pronounce these?
Elbereth Githoniel.
Thank you. At that time, he struck at his feet, at the feet of his enemy. A shrill cry rang out into the night, and he felt a pain like a dart of poisoned ice pierce his left shoulder. Even as he swooned, he caught, as through a swirling mist, a glimpse of Strider leaping out of the darkness with a flaming brand of wood in either hand. With a last effort, Frodo, dropping his sword, slipped the ring from his finger and closed his right hand upon it. His right hand tight upon it.
And there is your...
There's the knife,
knife
in the dark.
In the dark.
Yeah, it's not Bill Ferney.
Sorry.
It's not Bill Ferney cutting those ponies loose.
No, it is not.
It's the Ringwraith cutting Frodo loose. As in stabbing him in the shoulder.
Yep. What an amazing chapter.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned three sets of twos. Two instances of Strider chastising the hobbits over words. There's at least a third one where he said, don't say what you're about to say. But that doesn't count because these other two times he said, you know,
he says, don't say what you said.
Page 184. I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely or I shall become a wraith. Do not speak of such things, said Strider quickly and with surprising earnestness. Page 186. Going to Mordor, cried Pippin. I hope it won't come to that. Do not speak that name so loudly, said Strider. They're unprofitable words. Which is what we talked about in episode number 12. Remember, Pippin and his unprofitable words led to much well-mannered frivolity in the great room, the common room at the Prancing Pony. Proverbs 18, verse 21, we quoted, and that's out of the NRSVA, the New Revised Standard Version. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Do not speak those words. There are two instances of elegiac lament in this chapter. One on page 184, the hobbits thought of the soft light of sunset glancing through the cheerful windows of Bag End far away. The second one on page 188, they stood for a while silent on the hilltop near its southward edge in that lonely place. Frodo, for the first time, fully realized his homelessness and danger. He wished bitterly that his fortune had left him in the quiet and beloved Shire. He stared down at the hateful road leading back westward to his home. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 is an amazing chapter. Chapter 7 and chapter 9 are my two favorite chapters in Ecclesiastes. They are jam-packed with information. This one, verse 10 out of chapter 7, out of the NRSVA, again, the New Revised Standard Version. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. That's a heavy-duty message.
Yeah.
Who, have you ever known anybody that has not said, why were the former days better than these? Back in my day, well, the good old days, back in the golden age, back in such and such, we all do that. And the preacher in Ecclesiastes is saying, it's not from wisdom that you ask this. Why? How about this? Go back two verses more, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 8. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. Mm. And that is what this story is about. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. We're still in the beginning stages of this, and it's not good. But we know that the ending is good. Right, Brendan? Mm. So these elegiac laments, don't, you know, the Bible isn't saying anybody that says this, you're condemned. No, it's just saying this isn't wisdom. Don't dwell on these things. Frodo, it's not good to dwell on Bag End because that's going to get in the way. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. There are two instances of appealing to hope in this chapter. Page 189, Strider laid his hand on his shoulder. There is still hope, he said. You are not alone. And on page 190, but gathering and catching food is long and weary work, and we need haste. So tighten your belts and think with hope of the tables of Elrond's house. This reminds me of Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. We know the great chapter on hope. Right out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the men of old gained approval. Think with hope. Expect these tables of Elrond's house. If we make it there, expect a feast. Romans chapter 8, verses 24 and 25 out of the NASB. For in hope we have been saved. But hope that is seen is not hope. For Who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, with perseverance, we wait eagerly for it. We're learning in this chapter that words mean things. And if you are living in for the good old days and not moving towards the goal, you don't have the hope of those tables at Elrond's house. Just persevere. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. We could have gone into a whole discussion on the word hope. I can't read in Greek, but it's out of the Strong's number 1679. Is to expect or confide. It's to trust. In a religious sense, it's to wait for salvation with joy and full confidence. Those are the patterns that I saw in this chapter, and the Christian themes that we can pull out, because right now there is a lot of tendency for people there's a lot of elegiac lament going on. Yes. On Facebook and Twitter and comments on news articles. There's a whole lot of elegiac lament going on, and that is not from wisdom. That's what the preacher would say. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For it's not from wisdom that you ask this. Because better is the end of a thing than its beginning. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. And while you're going along, watch the words that you say. Because death and life are in the power of the tongue. And those who love its use will eat its fruit. You love to use the word Mordor and Ringwraith. You're going to call them to us, right? I'm not talking about name it, claim it kind of religiosity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the heart, right? And if you are living in the past, if you are longing for those olden days, you're going to miss out on the tables at Elrond's house, the last homie house. Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks off of that?
I got a couple.
You do? Go.
Yeah. So first, going back to Ecclesiastes chapter 7 specifically, we brought this up in FCC.
Finding Christ in Cinema?
Finding Christ
in
Cinema when we covered Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, we did.
Talking about Casey Affleck's character. What was his name? Lee?
Yes.
Lee Chandler. He was a sad guy. But he justifiably so, because yes. a tragic life. And what we brought up in that episode, or what I brought up in that episode, is in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, a few verses above what you read in verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter, for sadness has a refining influence on us.
Ah!
And Frodo, whenever we see Frodo go off into this elegiac lament, Frodo himself is becoming wiser. Even though he's already, how old is he at this point?
50.
Five?
He's 55?
No. Well, he's 50.
He's 50. Okay, yeah, he is 50. Even though he's already 50 years old, at this point in his life, he's still becoming wiser through these moments of first sadness and sorrow and his lamenting that he's not in the Shire.
Yes.
And that he wishes his fortune, you know, found him in the Shire still.
Yes.
However, because he's going through this, he's coming out on the other side wiser. And he's being refined slowly but
surely.
There's
a reward.
And so are, yes.
If you persevere.
Yes. And then speaking of that perseverance, could you read that definition of hope that you just read?
I could. Do you want me to?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Once again,
Strong's
please.
Number 1679, Elipizo. To expect or confide. Have a thing hoped for. Trust. In a religious sense, it's to wait for salvation with joy and full confidence.
Is that in the spreadsheet?
It is.
It is? Okay, I'm trying to find it.
Yes.
But it's funny you say the word wait, Michael. And whenever I'm in church and I hear, you know, someone say, well, you just got to wait for God.
Yeah.
You just got to wait for God to do the right thing. And he'll do what he needs to do. So you just got to wait for him. Unfortunately, and I'm guilty of this too, I just find it more and more common that when people hear the word wait, they mean, or they think it means to do nothing.
Yeah, do nothing. Sit there.
To sit still, to wait patiently.
Yes.
Yeah, and all those buzzwords.
Twiddle your thumb.
Yeah, all those buzzwords you want to throw around it, to wait patiently. Well, no, that's not what, that's not what that word means. Yeah.
That's not hope.
That's being idle.
Yeah. That's waiting.
That's being lazy.
Yeah, yes. That's doing nothing.
And I think it's, yeah, and it's interesting. You know, we've talked about this on Finding Christ in Cinema a lot of times too, is that faith isn't just a noun, it's a verb.
It is.
So you are faithing, you are hoping.
Doing something.
It is actively doing something.
We discussed this just on today's episode.
Yes. And it's very cool that Strider is there to keep them moving. When we come back to the Lord of the Rings.
He's an encourager.
Strider,
he's an encourager.
Hey, they're all encouraging everybody.
In some way.
But Strider's the main prod that keeps them going. He's spurring them on.
He's like Paul writing to the, I'm sorry, the writer of Hebrews writing in chapter 11.
Wait. Which writer of Hebrews? Which one?
And
you know, like seven or eight of them.
By faith, for hope, the confidence. That's what Strider is. Hey, wait for the tables at Elrond's house. If we get there, man, you're going to have exactly what you want to eat. But we have to do these things. We don't sit here idly in our elegiac lament, longing for the good old days. That's not getting us to where we need to go. And that is not hope. And that is not faith. That's not trust.
No.
That's not waiting. That's not even waiting. Oh, wow. Great lessons from this chapter that we have finally completed.
Finally. Took us a month.
I know it.
You need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No. Don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge the land beyond.
Mike, I take it your battery died in your computer.
It did. You can hear it telling me it a couple times. I apologize about that.
Hey, listeners, you know, what part of this chapter stood out to you and why? Let us know what stood out to you and why it stood out to you. We want to hear from you. And last time, a month ago or so, Bryn, we sent out party invitations.
What are these?
Replies to the party invitations.
And we got some replies.
Good gracious.
Yes, good gracious. We got some good ones. Shout out to Mark Lapicola. I believe I'm Lapicola.
Lapicola.
Yeah, I believe I'm saying this right. He left us a 5-star review for the podcast. And this one, Micah, if you haven't read this yet in the show notes, listen up.
He says, great listen. I have to admit, I'm not a particularly religious person, parentheses, non-practicing Catholic. Close parentheses, but I enjoy the podcast very much. I also enjoy Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and have read most of the Lost Tales books Christopher Tolkien published. One thing I have never done is break the book down in detail as you are doing in the Secret Fire podcast. It's enjoyable. Thanks, and I can't wait for the next episode.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That is a very kind comment and review, and that just tickles me.
And then we got a tweet from at Gondor Gator.
Yeah, so a special shout out to him.
He says, highlight of my week is listening to the Secret Fire podcast while at the gym. Wish there was a new episode daily. Oh, Lord.
Oh, boy. Hey, I would love to.
I'm sorry. Never.
But, yeah, but
sorry, guy.
Hey, a guy can dream.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, at Gondor Gator on Twitter. And then we got a voicemail via our SpeakPipe account by one Michael Potter.
Hello, this is Michael, the ranger from the north, well, Michigan. I'm calling to say thanks for your excellent podcast, Secret Fire Podcast. Been listening since the beginning. Just wanted to encourage you guys to consider making a Facebook group rather than just having a Facebook page. I find that Facebook is obnoxious and awful most of the time, like you. But I really have been enjoying the groups there. It seems to be a different atmosphere and might lend itself to the whole podcast and those listening. Anyway, This is Michael signing off. Have a great day.
Wait, we're as obnoxious as Facebook?
That's what I heard.
I could not agree more with him about Facebook.
Man. Yes.
What, was it the lightning puns? Is that what did it? Was it the lightning puns?
It was too much. He probably couldn't even finish this episode because of those lightning puns. So yeah. We don't know if Michael Potter is hearing this discussion about his comment. Thank you very much for leaving your voicemail and your encouragement and your suggestion about
the groups
on Facebook. Brendan, what do you think about that?
I don't know. See, I didn't know this was a thing, but I'm in a couple of different Facebook groups. One, the Christ and Pop Culture one, uh-huh. and then now recently the Popcorn Theology and the Real World Theology, and they have
they're groups, not pages.
Yeah, they're not pages; they're groups. And Facebook lingo, those are specifically different terms. And I'm starting to explore the differences, the benefits and the pitfalls, perhaps.
Yes.
Of what each one has,
okay,
or brings or does.
Well, as someone who has had many groups for plays and stuff, I find it's a great way for the heads, I suppose, to announce things. But it's also kind of like a thread.
Yeah,
everyone's. Yeah. So if somebody just wanted to discuss, it would all be there, and then you would have time maybe fishing through and finding the announcements from us or something.
Yeah. See, that's one thing, is if we did a group, never mind. Let's have this conversation off the mics.
Yeah. Here's my thing, that I personally don't want to be the one to run a group. I don't want to be the guy that I'm married to this, to this group and having to filter and moderate or what have you, because I don't like Facebook, and I really have to stay away from Facebook for my own spiritual well-being, because I get sucked into these comments that people are making that are just horrendous to me, but yet I'm not going to be the keyboard warrior correcting everybody and those things. We've seen those memes. Yep. Somebody laying awake at night, somebody's wrong on the internet, I need to blah blah blah, that kind of thing. And so if I'll tell you what, I would be much more inclined to pursue those avenues if we had people out there, listeners, that want to be involved in running things. That would get
moderators.
Yes. If we have listeners out there that say, you know what, boy, I really love these guys at the Secret Fire podcast and love what they're doing, and I want it to continue and I want it to grow and to thrive, things like that, I should see what I can do in order to help out in any way, because we need help. So that just gives me the opportunity to make that announcement. We haven't done that really since our introductory episode. We need help. And so, folks out there, if you have enough of an interest, if this show and what we do is an important part of your life, and you are willing to help run things, by all means, we're here, ears open, wide open. Right, Brendan?
Go. There you go.
Anything else? Any other feedback? No?
No, not today.
All right. Well, next week, chapter 12, what's that titled?
Flight to the Ford.
To the Ford, to the Batmobile. Oh, okay. But anyway, before we leave, we do have
too
some.
Soon.
We oh.
Yeah, wasn't your car?
I'm sorry, I'm uncouth.
Hmm? Was your car Ford?
No. Adam West.
No, it was.
That's what I was thinking.
No, I was thinking Adam West, but.
Oh.
Hey, before we leave, we have more party invitations to send out. The Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our Twitch page now at twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast.
I don't have it.
Yeah, and you can join us on you can join us on the Arkenstone server in Lord of the Rings Online. Right now, the summer festival is going on.
Yeah,
it's fun. Hey, a little aside, we are also streaming LOTRO videos on our Twitch page. So watch for more on that. But anyway, join us on LOTRO at lotro.com. And to find out more about the Secret Fire podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com, or you can call the Hobbit hotline, where Fatty Bulger is standing by to take your call.
Not anymore. Oh, it's in right. It's in Bree now. Bob and Nob.
Yes. Bob and Nob. That's right. So strike that. Reverse it. You can leave us a voice line. Bob and Nob are standing by in Bree at the Prancing Pony at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. Now you can get at us on Twitter at Secret Firecast. Or let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can go to Stitcher. You can go to iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher and search them all for the Secret Fire Podcast.
Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. You can find out more about them, buy CDs, all that good stuff, by visiting their website at thebards.net. And until next time, we regret to tell you...
this is the end. I'm going away. I'm leaving. Now, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Adios. Vaya con Dios. It means goodbye. Go with God.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's a blessing.
In disguise.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com.